Chris and him, you know, presenting those texts, sharing his thoughts, and certainly the thoughts you guys have contributed to. It's been a really great study to this point, and appreciate the wisdom that you guys have to offer about wisdom. And you guys have had some great thoughts so far, and I'm certainly looking forward to that tonight as well. So we finished the section 1 through 9. Remember, that was kind of its own section in the book of Proverbs, where Solomon is speaking as a father to a son. And you know, maybe there in chapter 4, verse 7 might be like the best way to sum it up, that passage where he says, you know, the beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. You know, like the wisest thing you can do, get wisdom. Because all throughout those 9 chapters, we're seeing, you know, the value of wisdom and the blessings of wisdom, the results of wisdom. You know, there are some specific lessons, like you know, warnings about, you know, the adulterous woman, and lessons about diligence and things like that. But the emphasis is about getting wisdom, holding on to wisdom. And so we saw a lot of that there in those first 9 chapters. Last class we talked about, remember, the call of wisdom and the call of folly. So you had these two voices calling, you know, and they're calling you to go down these two, you know, distinct paths. And that really, you know, is a big theme of Proverbs, is there are two paths. And, you know, one is the path of wisdom and righteousness that leads to, you know, riches and honor and life and all those things we've talked about. And there's this other path of foolishness and wickedness that leads to, you know, distress and anguish and destruction and all those things that we've talked about. And so, you know, that's our choice before us, is which path will we choose, you know, which call will we listen to. And then kind of bookended in that section is probably the best theme verse. And that's the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge or wisdom, as it says in the other instance. Chapter 1 has that verse, and then chapter 9 has that verse. So it's like that section's bookended with that thought, that wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord and you know, our the reverence we have for God, and you know, how we see God and our relationship with Him is kind of where that begins. So tonight we're going to get more into Solomon's Proverbs. Really, this kind of starts a series of topical lessons where we're going to look at chapters 10 through 22, where it's more of like the individual Proverbs, where like one verse kind of stands alone as its own proverb or its own lesson. So we're going to get into that tonight and talk about tonight. The lesson's called The Heart of the Wise. And then Wednesday we'll talk about, or Philip will talk about, the heart of the foolish. I'm going to do my best to not, you know, tromp all over his lesson, which may be tricky because some of these passages are like, do this and don't do this. And so I'm going to try to, you know, we'll focus on the wise tonight and maybe let him shade more towards the foolish and behaviors to avoid. But anyway, we'll talk about the heart of the wise. And again, I don't know if that's the best description or not. When I say heart, I really am talking about like heart and character. Maybe even like disposition, what gives them joy, just things like that. The very, I guess, core of who the wise man is. So that's what we'll talk about tonight. Let me get my PowerPoint up here. Okay. All right, I won't spend a lot of time on the class goals here. We'll go over those again. I probably emphasize probably the second goal should be a focus for perhaps this class and the next one, to equip ourselves with key verses for making wise choices that are grounded in the fear of the Lord. So we're going to talk about what the heart of the wise is, and it's that heart and that character that's going to equip us to make wise choices. So perhaps we need to focus on that one in this class. All right. So I want to, before we get into some actual character traits or qualities, I think there's a couple perspectives that the wise man has on the heart generally that we need to think about before we get into our study. The first being that the Lord sees and tests our hearts. Here in the 16th chapter, it says, all the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirit. And then the crucible is for silver and for gold, and the Lord tests hearts, right? So, you know, me, I'm not the most reliable judge of what's inside of me, you know, as this proverb says, but, you know, the Lord actually does weigh, our spirit and what's inside of us. And so, you know, we're accountable to him for what's on the inside. There in the second one, you know, just like that furnace is a, you know, test that gold with heat, you know, the Lord tests our heart. So he's the one that's got the standard for what our heart should be. And that's, he's testing, you know, the condition of our hearts. And so it matters what's in our heart. The Lord can see those impure, you know, motives when we're doing the right things for the wrong reasons. You know, those are things he can see. And so, you know, we're certainly accountable to him for our heart. But the second is this principle that the condition of our heart determines our course in life. I think we see that in this passage. I think we mentioned it in another class. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Right? So what's in our heart is, I think that passage is saying it's going to determine what happens in our lives. It's, you know, if the source of water is bad, then, you know, when that water flows to the springs, you know, it's going to make those springs bad, and vice versa for, you know, fresh and pure water. So what's in our heart is going to determine the things we do and say, and I think determine the course of our life. Why is that perspective important as we go into this? Well, the truth is Proverbs doesn't address every single possible situation that could come up in our lives and tell us how to handle them. And I think that makes these two lessons even more crucial to understand what kind of character the wise man has, what kind of heart he has, so that, you know, we can be equipped to handle whatever situation that does come up. Okay. Because we've transformed our inside, our spirit and our heart and our character, to what is shown here in Proverbs. And so we're better equipped to navigate really, you know, I guess infinite number of situations that may come up in our lives, even those that aren't mentioned here in this book. So I think these two perspectives are important for us to consider as we go in. All right. So the class tonight, there's going to be a lot of passages just on the screen. In fact, most of what's on the screen is going to be Proverbs. And I'm going to maybe talk through the first one here, but after that, I'm just going to put some up there and really look to you guys to maybe we'll stop and ponder what's on the screen for a few seconds. And then just really looking for you guys to give your thoughts on what qualities or what aspect of character that you see in these verses, and make some applications to ourselves. So I'll put the first group up here on the screen. And I'll go ahead and read through these for us here on the screen. Chapter 15, verse 33 says, "The fear of the Lord is instruction in wisdom, and humility comes before honor." And then chapter 22, verse 4, "The reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life." And then chapter 11, verse 2, "When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom." So, you know, we've already talked a lot about this connection between the fear of the Lord and wisdom, right? So, you know, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But there's another quality that's mentioned in here and almost seems to be just right there with them, right? It's humility. Right? I mean, humility is it's going hand in hand with the fear of the Lord. It's going hand in hand with wisdom here. You know, so maybe the most foundational concept we could ponder and consider in this class as it relates to the heart of the wise is that of humility. You know, the wise are humble people. And that probably shouldn't be a surprise because, you know, we already talked about how the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so recognizing, you know, who God is and then naturally who we are before him, you know, that he's up here and we're down here, you know, that's really the start of humility. And so it really shouldn't be a surprise that humility is right there as the foundation for wisdom and for what kind of heart a wise person should have. It makes me think of passages like in chapter 3, we talked about trusting in the Lord. Do not lean on your own understanding. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. So, again, it's this, if we have the proper fear of the Lord and our relationship with the Lord is what it is, that flies right in the face of being wise in our own eyes and being puffed up. But so that humility that is there with our relationship with the Lord is, of course, going to manifest itself, in our everyday life, in our relationship with others, really, in all these topics we're about to talk about in the next few classes, like, the way we speak and the way we use our money and, relationships with others and our diligence, the way we work. Next Sunday, I'm going to talk about, diligence in our work. And, just a quick little sneak peek, to that class over in, chapter 26 and verse 16, it's talking about the sluggard or the lazy man. And it says, the sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. Right. So what's at the heart or the root of this lazy man? Well, it seems to be, selfishness or pride. Right. So, humility just has this, it's just this foundation for really all of our wisdom in all these areas of life. And so I think we have to start with humility, when it comes to thinking about what our heart should be. There's one specific aspect of humility that Proverbs does discuss, and I'm sure Philip will talk about this, on Wednesday, but I wanted to mention it here, and that is, This idea of listening to advice or listening to reproof or correction. There's a lot of verses I could have put up on the screen. I just picked three here, but it says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. Chapter 10, verse 17, whoever heeds instruction is on the path to life, but he who rejects reproof leads others astray. And then finally, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid, right? So a big part of humility, or a big aspect of it in the book of Proverbs, is realizing that I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything. When someone comes to me with advice, I'm willing to listen. And not only advice, but when someone comes to me and says, hey, I think you got that wrong. I think what you said was wrong, or what you did was wrong or misleading, that we're open to listening to that and making the necessary corrections if needed. There, that one at the bottom there, we love discipline because we love knowledge. We just want to be correct, right? We just want to do the right thing. And so if that's what we're seeking wisdom, then someone comes to us and says, hey, you were off a little bit here. We're glad to take that, and make the necessary, corrections. I have a feeling Philip will talk about that, maybe from the fool's rejection of instruction on Wednesday. I'll open it up if you guys have any thoughts on that before we maybe move into some of the other qualities we'll think about tonight. All right. So this is what I'm going to do for the next few. I'm sure I have too many and we're running out of time, but that's the way it goes with my classes, it seems. But what I'm going to do is I'll put up some passages on the screen, and maybe don't respond for maybe like 20 seconds or so, and we'll just let everyone read it. And then I'd love to get your thoughts maybe on what character traits or qualities that you see in these passages about the kind of heart the wise man has. All right, I'll give you guys a few seconds and then open it up to thoughts you guys have. All right. What do you guys think? What can we learn about the character of the wise man from these passages?
Thinks about the consequences.
Yeah, right. Thinks about the consequences. Thinks, you know, sees the end of the thing. It's kind of a phrase I've heard kind of to describe prudence and wisdom. He sees what could happen if I take this action, right? Yeah, that's a good description. Yeah, what else?
I think they're also circumvent, that they look at their surroundings. They're not just focused on the one thing. They're really kind of looking at all angles of it and calculating, you know, what the consequences could be, like you've seen consequences.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's like a vigilance to it, right? So, all right, I need to be aware of the dangers that are out there and what could happen if those dangers are, if I pursue this action, like Brigham said. There's just an awareness of what's going on. There's certainly, I would say a respect for evil and its enticement, wouldn't you say? Think about the very first thing the father said to the son back in chapter one. He said, "Son, beware when sinners entice you." he's respectful for, it's not, promoting evil, but it's a respect for evil and the danger that it has and the dangers of enticement of evil. What else do you guys see or think about that?
Well, Jake.
James?
No, I was just going to say I was going to follow up what you were saying. The person that's wise, he's listened to someone that told him about evil, to explain to him the pitfalls and those things. And we talked about those that are wise, you can still learn things. And this person is wise and will turn away from evil, recognizing and respecting that. Because someone has informed him, and he took it into himself and trusted it.
That's right, man. Yeah, I think about the warnings the father gave to the son in chapters 5 through 7 about, about the adulterous woman, right? And got to recognize our vulnerability to those temptations. And what does he say to her? What does the father say to the son? Keep your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Will you only take that drastic of an action is if you're aware of what may happen if you don't do whatever it takes to stay far away from her, right? It's vigilance. It's a recognition of evil and the seriousness of the enticement of evil, recognition of our own vulnerability, that exists. And of course, taking the necessary actions to do all we can to avoid it.
Jake, another quality of the wise in these verses is self-control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I.e., when you're in self-control, you think through all the issues before you either speak or act. And James is dominant in reminding us of that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Being able to, we're actually going to talk about that here in a little while, but controlling, your desires and having that control over those desires and temptations is key. You're right.
Jake, I think that Samson is a good example. Samson and Delilah, he was reckless and careless and went on, but he had to suffer for it. He was just didn't even think about it. It was obvious, would be obvious to anybody else that she was just bringing him on toward disaster, but he didn't see it. He went on and thought perhaps he could get out of it, but he had to suffer.
It's an excellent example, excellent cautionary tale. Yeah.
I was thinking of the prodigal son. It just keeps coming to my mind that, he wasn't wise, but, he's the opposite. He's, selfish and he doesn't think ahead. He's all the things that you've been talking about. Doesn't stop and think. He just wants what's here now and what's for himself. And was not being prudent and not being wise in making his decision that here, I want my money. I want to be able to go do what I want to do.
That's right. Yeah, that's well said. And a few slides down from here, we could talk about some of the things that the right or the wise take joy in. And one of the contrasts made in Proverbs is it's not a joy in pleasure, right? But it's a joy in things that are longer lasting.
Right.
And so that's, I think that what you were saying, right, is being able to see past just immediate, you know, satisfaction and pleasure, but being able to see past that to the things that are longer lasting. Yeah. All right. I'm going to move on to the next set of verses, that the wise respect the enticement and dangers of evil. All right. So let me put up a few more here. And again, let's take like 30 seconds and you guys look over these, and then I'll ask you the same question. All right. What do you guys think? What can we learn about the character of the wise here in these passages?
It seems to me that the person of integrity is somebody that they know what they stand for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because they have some certainty about what they stand for, it helps them avoid some of the distractions in these verses.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That's right. It kind of starts with knowing. Maybe like the word like moral code is often used, you know, probably, but, you know, I think we can think about it richer than that, knowing what we stand for, you know, God's principles and his righteousness, right? Knowing what you stand for and then living true to those things, right? I think would certainly be a big part of it. Yeah, what else do you guys think? What does integrity mean to you?
It's someone who can be trusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To, you know, you, your yes is yes and your no, no. It's, you know, you have integrity and can be trusted as someone to speak the truth and to do what they intend to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of the definitions that I've looked up in various places, like the word honesty comes up a lot, and I don't think it's always like honesty in the things you say, and I think that is certainly part of it, but it's almost like an honesty in the things you do as well. So this is what I know is right, and that therefore is the thing that I do as well, and you can trust that mm-hmm. person to do the things they know is right, if that made sense the way I said it. But so it's almost like it's and honesty and that they stay true to what they know is right. And there's certainly a trustworthiness that comes from that. Absolutely.
Well, helps guide them to do what they need, what is right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like it says there in that middle passage, right? The integrity of the upright guides them. So it is a guide for us, certainly.
It makes me think of a compass. So if you have a working compass, it'll guide you to the right direction. But if you have a compass that's broken, it's going to end up, you're going to be destroyed if you're on the sea and you don't know where you're going. So,
yeah. To me, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it kind of goes back to what Philip's saying, knowing what you stand for and are we standing for the right things, right? Or is our compass completely off? You know, once we get that set, then following that is certainly key. Yeah, Philip?
Well, kind of bouncing off of Susan's comment too, like all of these verses mention the consequence. Mm-hmm. That if you think you're going to get away with it and nobody knows, you'll actually be found out. And if you think that being crooked is going to be more profitable, it'll actually bring destruction. And if you think you can hide this just with flowery language and smooth it over your speech, actually your speech is what is going to be the very thing that betrays you. And so there's a sense of departing from integrity always carries consequences.
When I think of integrity, I always think about when I was a junior in high school in a history class, and there were several students who were caught cheating on a test. And I remember the teacher, she gave this passionate speech about integrity. Basically saying that these kids knew that what they did was not right, yet, you know, when the moment was there, when they were tempted, you know, they failed to follow what they knew was right. And so I think about that, like, you know, those who didn't cheat on the test, we didn't have to worry about being found out and being in trouble about that, because we could walk secure, I think, as the language of this proverb would say. But those who did not, just in that really specific instance, you know, were found out. So that really specific thing always comes to mind, when I think probably because she gave such a passionate speech about it. But, you know, if we live, you know what we stand for, and we live that out with honesty in our actions, you know, we can walk securely. I think that's the contrast made there.
So, yeah. So Jake, I just want to connect this line with your previous line.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that the wise not only can see the danger, but they will also experience less danger in their life.
Yeah. See the danger, then they, because they've recognized it, they actually experience less of it, right? Yeah, that's a good connection. Yeah. And then there, that the one at the bottom there, one of those kind of better than parallelism passages that, what's more important, you know, having riches, material wealth, or our integrity? And certainly integrity wins out. I'm going to have to move on since we do have a few here. The wise are people of integrity, holding fast to what they know is right. You know, I think about, like, there's, you know, the other use of the word integrity is used, like, when we talk about a structure, right? Like a structural integrity. So, you know, will it hold up? When, especially when it's tested with wind or storms. And I think there's, we could think about that definition and take it over to the character side of integrity, that, all right, are we going to hold up when maybe it becomes difficult to live out the things that we stand for, right? You know, what kind of structural integrity do we have, if you'll allow me to make that comparison. So I think that's a helpful way to think about it is do we hold fast to what's right, even when it's maybe difficult, even when we're tested. All right. Let's see here. Check my time. All right, 5:30. All right, let's put up some, again, I probably should have limited this to maybe less than three, but there's so many good ones that have some busy slides here. So let's take a few seconds here, and I'll let you guys look over these, and let's think about the character traits here. All right, what do you guys think?
I think this is hard to do when you have teenagers living in your house.
Yes, as a former teenager to parents, I will attest to that.
I'll tell you this, on the worksheet you handed out,
uh-huh.
Like I put down for 16:32. That's one of my favorite proverbs.
Yes, me too.
That being slow of anger is more impressive than conquering a city, and all not just more impressive, but more frequently necessary. You know, it's very rare that we're going to be called to go conquer a city single-handedly, but yeah. All of us are going to have days, hours, moments, seconds that we need this. It is just frequently necessary.
That's right. Yes. Yes, good. It's well said.
And I basically read this very similar thing, that still Genesis controlling one's rage is more impressive than completing an exploit. But I also said doing rash actions out of anger can have devastating consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in terms of character qualities, there's obviously self-control here, right? I mean, we have to be able to exhibit some self-control. I think the wise man is certainly able to do that. And but you're right about the way many of these proverbs are written is, okay, if you don't, this is what's going to happen. And just look at the descriptions here, and, you know, it's obviously can wreak havoc when we can't control ourselves, and, you know, our emotions run wild, our desires run wild. Obviously, devastating impacts from that. Self-control. And it's not even just a restraint where, you know, I'm able to resist, you know, punching this guy or resist, you know, yelling at him, but look at the opposite effect that it's had in these cases, right? So he's slow to anger. He actually quiets contention. There in that second one, it talks about a tranquil heart, and that word tranquil is actually, I think the Hebrew word is more about like healing. So not only are you avoiding lashing back at this person, you're actually, you know, helping to diffuse the situation. There's actually peace that's being promoted and healing that's being promoted by our self-control. So I think that's, again, it's almost, we can have the opposite effect versus if we have total lack of self-control and the situation can explode. Again, like Philip said, the last one there is one of my favorites too, especially the idea of ruling your spirit. What do you guys think about that? What does it mean to rule your spirit?
Eric, I think that there is a difference in the way we're born. Some people are born with a tendency to be angry and to lash out. Others are seen to be born with a very quiet spirit. And we need to take note of and realize if a hot temper is my nature, that's not an excuse. That's just something I need to work on. That's something I need to control. And when I learn to control that hot temper and deal quietly and rationally with a problem, then I've learned to rule my spirit, and that's more, it takes more some time to do that than to take the city.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If we can't rule our spirit and control our emotions, you know, we're in some trouble, right? And that's, like you said, it's easier for some than it is for others, but it's all something that we've got to be able to do, to control our emotions, you know, and certainly control our anger. And I might even add that, so, you know, those days where you just wake up and we're just in a bad, foul mood, you know, for whatever reason. And do we need to just let that fester and just go all day and just be snapping at people? And we need to learn how to rule over that, if you will, right? And control that. And because there are certainly days where you wake up and you're just in a foul mood. And, you know, those are things that we need to be able to conquer and rule over.
Just one quick thing. If people don't have a cross reference already in their Bible on 16:32, I think it's a really good idea to just go ahead and write down chapter 25, verse 28. That is just one of my favorite cross references to go with this. So chapter 25 and verse 28 is again that language of a city being broken, but this time saying like like the walls are supposed to keep the bad things out and the good things in. And if we don't have the self-control that these two Proverbs talk about, then we're completely vulnerable, and we're vulnerable to the attacks of others, and we're vulnerable to our own foolishness. And so I think 16:32 and 25:28 are a really dynamic duo.
And Jake, too, that's one of the top qualities for the leadership in the church, because it really reflects God and his control. And Jesus had righteous anger, and righteous anger is okay, but that's one of the qualities that elders must have. And it's very difficult to teach others the gospel if you are not a self-controlled and gentle spirit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to lose a lot of influence, right? If we are someone who's prone to fly off the handle and show complete lack of self-control. And you're right about the leadership too, right? I mean, it's just going to allow for better sober-minded decision-making, right? If they're able to control their emotions. I might even add too about, we talked about controlling emotions, controlling our desires as well. I think there's a piece of that in here too. If I'm going to rule my spirit, well, those desires come from within. And if I can't control those, I'm in some trouble too, right? I couldn't help but think of Cain in Genesis 4, when, you know, sin was crouching at the door, and it's, you know, sin is coming for you, but God says you must rule over it, you know. So this idea that these desires are there, but we've got to learn to rule over that. So
this is also for me to rule the spirit. You need to understand your character. And once you understand your character, then you know, you know what you need to do as far as, you know, in order to rule your spirit. You need to understand that this is my character. This is the way that I am. Mm-hmm. So step back and make sure that I'm, you know, I'm doing the right thing. But you need to understand. Some people don't understand it. This is them. This is your character, but you need to, it may need to be changed.
You're right. Yeah, it's the degree where we need to be reflective enough about who we are and maybe what we struggle with to be able to, you know, to rule over that where we're needed. That's a good point. James, I thought you popped up on my screen a while ago. Sorry if I cut you off. But.
No. Philip just – it was saying something with Philip. No, it's fine. But I was just thinking the last comment was that that's when humility is really needed. It helps us to assess ourselves and helps us to listen, especially to God's word, and then someone else just trying to impart to say, yeah, you're a little hot-headed. You need to dial that back, and only someone that's humble is going to accept that and then try to make some changes. But if you don't have that quality, you're going to always – you'll never listen to anyone, not even God, when he tries to instruct you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I don't have this one on the screen. I'm just going to read it. It's over in chapter 19, verse 11, where it says, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. Right? So there's this aspect of being slow to anger that is overlooking an offense. And I know that that's really foreign to today's thinking. You know, somebody may do something to us that, or we could be offended, or it may be a reason to make us angry. But what does he say the wise thing is to do? Well, it's to overlook it, or at least look to overlook it. I think there's a contrast here between maybe someone who maybe looking to be offended with someone who's actually, it's his glory. You know, he wants to actually move past it or overlook it. And so I think that's important for us to consider as well. All right. The wise have a self-control that promotes peace instead of contention. All right. A couple more here. If you guys want to ponder over that for a few seconds, I'm going to run out of time here. So I'm going to cut it down a little bit, but I'll just go ahead and read them. It says there in chapter 11, verse 17, a man who is kind benefits himself, but a cruel man hurts himself. And then 12:10, whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast, but the mercy of the wicked is cruel. What qualities do you guys see in these proverbs?
I think you see that they have care in others to the extent of even animals, mm-hmm. And display of not focusing so much on themselves or selfish desires, but seeing how they can help others.
Yeah. I think there's a natural gentleness, right? And caring and mercy that, we've all seen people that maybe are only kind and gentle to those who maybe can help them. They're only going to get something out of it. But I mean, this man here is caring for even his animal, right? Somebody's not going to be able to help him, obviously. So I think it just shows you an overall gentleness and care for other people and all of God's creatures. So that's a good point. Yeah. Anything else?
This person seems to understand why authority exists in the first place, mm-hmm. that anything they have authority over, whether it's themselves or their animals, it's so that they can steward them and bring out their well-being.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a good point about just being in a position of authority and the care that he shows. That's a good example there, too. Yeah, again, thinking about just the treatment of animals specifically, if someone is cruel to animals, I mean, obviously, I think that's a reflection of a poor diseased heart. But I think the emphasis here is again on just the overall gentleness that the wise man has, where, even the life of his beast and these. These were necessarily pets they had back then, right? This wasn't the family dog. I mean, this was, the animals used for work and things like that. Yeah, there's still this regard and this mercy and care for it. All right, I'm going to move on to the next one. The wise are gentle and kind, reflected in their treatment of all of God's creatures. I'm going to go ahead and read these as well. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps the thing covered, right? So there, I think someone already mentioned about being trustworthy. I think that's certainly a part of the character of the wise man. I think the Proverbs has a good bit to say about friendship and what it means to be a true friend. And I think certainly being trustworthy is a big part of that. So, someone comes to me with something and they tell me something in confidence. If I go and I start telling that to everyone, what have I done to that relationship? I've destroyed it in effect. And are they ever going to come to me again? Probably not. All of the wonderful blessings about being brothers and sisters and the sharing we can have with one another. If I'm not someone who can be trusted and I go about and I'm saying, hey, did you hear what happened to so-and-so and they told me this and we're just going to destroy all the blessings of those relationships. Another passage here, many a man proclaims his own steadfast love, but a faithful man who can find, right? So it's rare that this faithfulness, and I think he's talking about faithfulness of a friend here. It's rare to find that, but we ought to be friends that are faithful, which I don't have these passages up here, but the faithfulness of friends sometimes can be correcting that friend when needed, right? So, a true friend, as Proverbs would show it, is one who has, their best interest, even if that means, some tough love at times. So I think the wise man is someone who's trustworthy and the faithful friend as well. Any thoughts or any quick comments on that?
Jacob, it's interesting to put those two things together. This a faithful man is not going to reveal secrets. And one of the ways some people get secrets is by telling, I love you, you're just my favorite person, and you get him off defense, and then he'll reveal his secrets, and then such a person will run and tell somebody else, and look what I've learned. And some people even take a pride in the fact that I'm close enough to a certain person, he just tells me this in secret. Yeah. But the keeping a secret is a real test of faithfulness.
Yeah.
When, especially if it's something that would be hurtful to the person about whom it was revealed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, there's so much we can take from being able to confess things to one another, and to be able to rely on discretion and trusting and keeping those secrets when needed. And again, destroying that is not something we need to do, obviously. Let's see what we got time for here. Been a wise or trustworthy and faithful friends. So I have a few passages here that talk about the joy, and what the wise and righteous take joy in. I won't be able to spend a lot of time on this, but again, deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but those who plan peace have joy. So there's joy in just peace, I think, in harmony and in relationships. When justice is done, it is a joy to the righteous, but terror to evildoers. So certainly there's a joy as it relates to justice when injustices are made just and made right. I think what this passage is saying is that when justice is done and the righteous are rewarded and the wicked are punished, that the righteous are going to have a reason to be joyful, right? Because of that righteousness. So, and then finally, the hope of the righteous brings joy. So again, you know, as someone brought up earlier, you know, looking past just the joy of pleasure and what's fleeting, but looking to something that's more lasting, like, you know, the hope of the righteous is what gives them joy. Of course, I don't know what all the scope of what Solomon knew about the hope of the righteous in this passage, but regardless, we have a fuller picture of what that can be. And, you know, does our hope, you know, is that what brings us true joy, or is it the empty things that don't last near as long?
Jay.
Yes.
Do you know that I didn't check the last verse you have up there where it says hope, and then in the other part it says expectation? I almost use expectation instead of hope. I mean, it means the same thing. From our perspective, the expectation of the righteous brings us joy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if those words in the Hebrew, were they interchangeable or what words they were, but I was just thinking from our point of view, that is the expectation of the righteous, what's going to happen, how God's going to work things out. It does bring us joy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. No, I didn't look up anything related to the Hebrew, but you're right. That hope is really should be an expectation, right? There's not a doubt or, you know, will it happen or not, but it is an expectation. I took the use of expectation in the second part of this verse just to refer that it's not really any kind of hope at all that the wicked have.
So maybe,
yeah, like you could use expectation for hope just to describe how rich the hope is, but maybe hope was too positive of a word to use related to the wicked, if that makes sense. So
they hope it'll work out, but it's really not going to work out.
Right, yeah, it's an empty hope, right, if you would use the word hope. But you're right, I mean, the hope there is a rich expectation and not just a wishful thinking, certainly.
But also the expectation can just be too that if because of what was going on or what you're doing is that in the future this is what's going to happen. So, you know, if expectation of the wicked will perish is just letting you know what can happen in the future, you know, with the wicked people. Yeah. That's the way I see it also.
Right. Yeah. Whatever they hope and expect, it's going to come to nothing. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Jay. Yeah. Okay. So to answer James' question, I looked it up real quick.
Yeah.
The word for expectation there in Proverbs 10:28 is literally cord. And it's kind of like, what have I tied onto the other end of this cord? And as I pull it towards myself, then I'm hoping to get whatever's in the bucket tied at the end. But it is translated directly as hope 23 different times. So hope and expectation, very, very synonymous in this verse. And it's idea of what am I pulling in?
We know what's on the end of the hope that we have. So
yeah.
I think that's some more of that Hebrew poetry.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Poetic language. All right. So
you're out of time, buddy.
I'm out of time. All right. Do I have 2 minutes? I'm going to, Philip asked us the other night about our most impactful passage in chapter 8. Mine was this short little phrase in 8:14 where it says, I have strength, wisdom talking. You know, so what is the strength that wisdom has? Well, I think it's what we talked about tonight. True strength is in humility, you know, not saying we're not afraid of anything, but being aware of that there are dangers and avoiding them, showing integrity, holding up even when it's difficult, being able to control our emotions and desires, being kind and gentle, and taking joy in the things that last. So I think that's the strength that lies in wisdom, where the worldly view of strength is easily, there is way off from that. So, yeah, put my conclusion in 20 seconds there. So, look forward to Wednesday night, where we'll talk about it from the negative side. So, all right, thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you, Jake.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jake.
Thank you, Jake.
Super encouraging lesson.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.